Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I've been sporting my Maryland gear out here as we get ready for March Madness, but during this very, very tough time with vaccines, and we're entering year two now of COVID and COVID era, Don Mohler and I are going to be presenting some very important conversations this week on behalf of the Maryland Hospital Association and lots of folks around the state. Don, we're preparing for vaccines, but that will not stop us from going to Fadley's, from doing this with masks, from continuing to sanitize, wash our hands, be safe, get over to State Fair, stop by El Guapo and get some carry out for all of our sponsors. And I'm supporting my friends at Pizza John's here, and our newest sponsor, and Wise Conversations with our friends at Wise Markets. Don Mohler joins us. Don, we've talked so much, and with your sister especially, and your family, people in our space, about mental health. I am delighted that we're going to really do a drill down here locally with local people working on this.
Well, particularly, Nestor, at a time when children across the region, across state, across the United States are beginning to make their way back into classrooms, I cannot think of a more important topic, and really appreciate the Maryland Hospital Association working with us to bring this information to our listeners. Who are we talking to today, Nestor?
Carmen Lopez Arvizu. I'll make sure I get that pronunciation right, my Latin background. Carmen, good morning to you. How are you today?
Good morning. Very good. Thank you.
Dr. Lopez joins us as the Medical Director of Psychiatric Mental Health Program at Kennedy Krieger Institute. We are also joined, and no more Baltimore Positive than this, on the other side at Shepherd Pratt, Medical Director in Outpatient Services. We welcome Dr. Deepak Prabhakar. Did I get the pronunciations right? I've been working hard on this, Doc. Well, we welcome you in today to say the work you do in any normal time, incredibly challenging. This last year, and I'll start with you, Dr. Lopez, what have we seen in this last year that could not have been known without being in the middle of a pandemic?
So I think we actually knew that the shortages for services, for mental health services for children, is very, very high. So we have increased demand for services that we have had trouble to fulfill. But we have definitely seen an increase of anxiety in children and adolescents all over.
Well, the fact that normalization, and Don talks about his grandchildren all the time, just the fact that they're not walking out the door, going to a normal place, doing normal things by and large, that this particular part of wherever they are, 6 years old, 8, 10, 12, that the impact of this could last a lifetime in many respects for all of us adults, but especially for children, correct?
Correct. We have seen this in other times, in other pandemic episodes throughout the history. So we do know that these kinds of events have long-term effects. However, the main thing that we are seeing now is that children thrive in routine, in structure. So the uncertainty of what's happening on a day-to-day basis is definitely adding to the stress. On top of, school and the reality of the financial world around them at this time and the consequences in their family situations.
Well, Dr. Prabhakar, one of the things, and Nestor's right, I have seven grandchildren, and I look at them, they go from 21 down to 5 years old. Think of what they're experiencing and how they're trying to adjust. What I hear and read so much about anxiety. I think parents read and hear so much about anxiety. I hear about it all of the time. Can you put a face on that for our listeners in terms of how that manifests itself in children, in young people? What does anxiety look like when I take that term and put it into real life?
Yeah. So before we even get there, I think we have to realize that children in general, they like routines, they like predictability. They like socialization-related aspects of their, attending schools or meeting with neighbors or their own family members. And any disruption in any of that actually can cause anxiety. Now, when you look at what anxiety means, these are the children who might be suffering, sometimes not necessarily a fully diagnosed anxiety disorder, but sometimes they may have symptoms of anxiety where they might be jittery, where they might be irritable. Where they may not feel comfortable with every change in routine that gets thrown at them. So all in all, you tend to see a child who starts withdrawing a bit moves away from activities, moves away from their own family members, and tends to have more complaints and more problems that they sometimes are able to verbalize depending on their age and comfort level, and other times they can't. And that does manifest itself in some behaviors.
Don and I talk about, you know, our parents, and we talk with folks all the time about their upbringing and where they were. And, you know, I always felt like my parents were like Superman, Superwoman. In this last year, for every adult that has been thrown in amongst this chaos, whether it's working from home, pressures for sales in my own business, PPPs and partners and all of those type of things, for children to go to their parents and the parents are struggling, I'm sure right now over the last year, just on a, and I know you can't give specific examples, but just the things you have seen in the last year where otherwise relatively stable adults, that these children don't have parents who are stable anymore because this last year has created anxiety or in some cases depression. And I'm not sure exactly where the edge of that is, Dr. Lopez.
So, you know, what happens is that, you know, we have been exposed to stress. This prolonged stress, which has been very real for all of us, can turn into pathological anxiety. And then the anxiety can turn into depression. So one of the things that we cannot forget is that the stress and the fear is also very real. We have been afraid of getting sick. We have been afraid of losing our family members. We have been afraid of our economic circumstances. And then add that to the political environment that we have had in the last few years. There's a lot of real stress and real fear for many reasons. So one of the things that this pandemic has actually facilitated in a positive manner is that telehealth has been opened for many people. So now more people have access to mental health without having to miss work, without having to miss classes, so and without having to drive 2 hours to get to the Baltimore area. So we have seen a positive in that sense. We have seen employers making sure their employees reach out and get mental health support. So, you know, even in the midst of all this terrible things that have happened, we have had this positivity in it. We have also seen some positives in the sense of family life. There's nowhere to go. You have to stay safe and to have social distance. This has given also an opportunity to be families again, to have dinner together, which we had lost as time went by because everything was outside the home. So there's positive as well. And then we have also the difficulty of, yes, you just said it, when your family life is great, then it's, you know, this is going to be supportive of you. But when you had a difficult family life to start with, this definitely complicates things.
Do children, one of the, and I guess this is for both of you, I looked at a couple of studies over the weekend, and I saw one that really was a head scratcher, and I thought maybe both of you could weigh in because I know data, you can make data show whatever you'd like it to show. But I saw one study that said that if I took 10 children, 10 young people at random today, just went and picked out 10, that roughly 7 out of 10 would indicate that they felt more stressed, more pressure, that they felt worse over the past year than they did prior to that. Is that a number that you're comfortable with? Are we talking about numbers in that kind of magnitude here?
Sure. I mean, if you look at the data that's coming out of CDC based on their weekly household surveys also, it ranges anywhere from 40% to 60% depending upon how you are measuring and what you are measuring. So when it looks at anxiety and depression together, those numbers, even in adults, you know, we are talking in the range of 30 to 40% individuals reporting symptoms of anxiety and depression. The number grows and goes up when you start talking about general stress. And similarly, as you kind of go down the age spectrum and start talking to children, you know, kinds of things we have discussed, they are reporting more stress, more anxiety compared to where they were a year before. So, those numbers do make sense. Now, depending upon the population you are surveying, depending upon the question you are asking, these numbers are going to fluctuate a bit between studies.
If you just joined us, we are chatting about mental health. Your mental health is certainly your children, grandchildren, everyone in our community, along with my partner, Don Mulder, former Baltimore County executive, today with Dr. Carmen Lopez Arbizu, as well as right here locally, Kennedy Krieger. We're keeping it Baltimore positive for sure. Dr. Deepak Prabhakar, medical director in outpatient services at Shepherd Pratt, from one side of town to the other. I would say that during this period of time, and I have all these friends on Facebook and LinkedIn, there's somebody out there who's struggling right now and feels like, never called a doctor, never called a shrink. I don't even know where to turn. I don't know a psychiatrist, psychologist. I don't feel comfortable talking to maybe someone in my faith or someone in my family, that you want privacy. If someone is at their edge and they want help and need help in the modern era, how do they do this, Dr. Lopez?
So, you know, first of all, as whomever reaches out to you, it's very important to validate, to hear what they're saying to you, because you cannot dismiss their feelings or their perception. So that's number one. You have to encourage them to seek help. And I think people might not feel comfortable reaching out to their pastor but you know, what about the school counselor? What about a neighbor? What about your primary care? I think there are many mental health professionals around, but sometimes it's also difficult to find out which way to go. So that's where you should start, with your primary care. Second, there's your mental health department in your county and the crisis lines. Now, you don't have to be necessarily in absolute crisis to call them. You can also call them to guide and access services. That might be a good match for you. And, you know, seeing somebody.
And what would they say to you? Would they say, do you have insurance? I mean, the first thing is, how are we going to pay for it? And that's probably one of the things that's led them to the edge to begin with, is they feel like they can't afford this.
Correct. So, you know, most places have, even private places, have sliding scales that you can facilitate if you do not have insurance. So there are places that you can see. I don't think at the moment you have to reach out. The how to get it paid, it's something that it can be worked on wherever you go. So you cannot, you know, your life is at stake. The life of your family is at stake. So you need to reach out.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I would just add to that, let that not be our primary barrier when we are seeking help. Every institution is trying to do their best in terms of help facilitate delivery of care, good quality care. And there are mechanisms, you know, that we have available to us, including enrolling people who qualify in medical assistance. And then every institution has their own way of getting financial assistance established for the patients who are in.
Doc, for people who are fearful, give them, if when I hear Shepherd Pratt, I mean, all of my life it has been associated with being a place that I probably don't want to visit as a patient, right? That when someone calls you, what does that day look like? What does that entry look like, that if someone finds themselves at your front door and thinks, what am I doing here? What are they going to find when they come to you? What's the first day look like?
Yeah, such a great question. And thanks for asking that. So first thing, that one thing that we have been able to do through the pandemic at Shepherd Pratt is now we have what we call virtual urgent care services. These services, you don't have to be located closer to our campus in Baltimore County. You can be anywhere in Maryland. So your day will look like you are somebody who has been identified by a near and dear one, by their primary care provider or yourself. You may get to our website or call our number. The moment you do either of those two, within a few minutes, you'll be contacted by our access coordinator. And when our access coordinator speaks with you, their primary emphasis is going to be around, you know, getting all the necessary information from you, explaining to you how an appointment will work, and then linking you with a next level provider. These appointments happen during the day itself. These are not the appointments that, you know, will be pushed out several weeks down the road. So you basically can anticipate a phone call coming back from our provider group. If you're able to visit, you can visit on campus. You can have that assessment evaluation done in person. If you are living from far off, you can just get connected using our virtual telehealth mechanism. And by the end of that first evaluation, you will know for sure what your needs are. So if this is a person who is in acute who has an acute need for psychiatric care, we may link them up with our high level of services, including day hospital programs and our inpatient programs. But many people, they want to be linked to that mental health resource closer to their home or through telehealth, where they can actually talk to someone, get professional psychotherapy, and in other cases, professional outpatient services. So your day may end up based on the assessment what your needs are. But it can all be accomplished in the same day during the hours that we offer.
Don, we've talked so much with your sister, you know, last couple of years, just about removing the stigma and feeling like there is help and that you can go get help, right?
Absolutely. And Nestor, it's very, very real. I would ask both of our guests to react to this question. It's the suicidal question. Certainly as a former school principal in a past life, something I had to deal with every school year with some family. And just last week, I had a friend call, was really upset, really concerned because someone had just contacted him, felt that their teenage daughter was in a very bad place, a very dangerous place at that moment. Suicidal, talking, you know, really clear ideations about how they envisioned this was going to happen and did not know where to turn. So I would ask both of you, if a friend of yours called and their child was suicidal, what advice would you give them right from Jump Street, what they needed to do right away?
So, you know, as I said before, I think you do not hesitate. If you are concerned about a life and death situation, you either call 911, you go to the emergency room for an emergency assessment. And if you have no way of doing that or really are hesitant to go there, call the crisis line. Every county has one. That's where you should start.
Appreciate the insights. Dr. Carmen Lopez Arvizu is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Kennedy Krieger. We're also joined by Dr. Deepak Prabhakar. He's the medical director and outpatient services at Shepherd Pratt. We're doing this all week long. We're going to be reaching out throughout the Maryland Hospital Association to learn as much as we can about all of this and vaccines and how we can become safer, and certainly in this second year as we enter this, where we have lots and lots of mental health challenges throughout. The local part of this and the online part, Don and I, we prefer to be over at State Fair having fresh pressed coffee and chicken and waffles, but obviously from medical care, there's nothing like being in the room. But can both of you speak to this virtual part of giving care virtually and finding success and results a year into this where it is very, very difficult to move about and feel safe doing that in the middle of this pandemic?
So yeah, sure. I'll speak to a couple of our unique experiences through the pandemic. First and foremost, just based on all the preventative measures that went into play back in March and April, movement was not that easy for folks to just get in the car and start moving around wherever they needed help. So virtual health really helped bridge that gap, where instead of figuring out where to go, how to go, what kinds of questions I may be asked if I'm not one of those individuals who is allowed to freely move around, care basically came to you in the comfort of your own home. Another good lesson out of this is I think we all have struggled in some way, shape, or form with health disparities when it comes to access to health. Now, this is not unique to rural environments only. I think people sometimes forget that in our city environment, urban environments, we do have shortages when it comes to healthcare providers. And where virtual health has really helped us is connecting that patient who might be struggling in an urban environment, in a rural environment, reach a qualified healthcare professional rather than having to travel or figuring things out on their own. One place that I would suggest is, you know, for us to qualify this is there are certain acute conditions where an in-person visit is absolutely needed for an appropriate medical examination. And in those cases, after the first telehealth kind of outreach, many a times we have decided that the patient, their care needs are better served in an in-person environment, whether that's a clinic, urgent care environment, or in rare cases, even emergency room.
You know, my heart is with education. I spent many, many years on that side of the aisle. As this airs, and as Nestor said, we take a look at all these issues. Students in across the region are heading back to school. I worry about them because it's like now they've been in this one environment for almost 1 year exactly. And now we're going to begin to drop them back in another environment.
Well, the social part of it alone, just the fact that they can interact for the first time, That's going to be above and beyond anything educational. Just the social part of that, right? Literally.
That really gets to my question, Nestor, and that is for both Dr. Lopez. I'll start with you. What if you were in front of a faculty this morning and the administrators, what would you tell them to expect as their little ones come back this week?
So, be supportive. You have to address first their fears of coming back to school in both ways, in the social way, but also on the, am I going to get sick because I'm here? So emphasize hygiene measures, talk about COVID, reassure them. They might be more afraid of coming back in than staying home. We don't know. And every individual is different. So you have to meet them where they are. And, I know that's a lot to ask of teachers, but, that's where they should also, talk with the school nurse, the school counselors, the guidance counselors. Everybody needs to work as a team. Well, and as a parent, you should start with that before they get to school.
Well, Nestor and I are going to have, we have another little segment that we do every week called the Recon. And one of the topics we're going to be looking at today is this whole idea of high stakes testing for children this spring in the state of Maryland. And full disclosure, when I saw the state was not going to postpone those tests for a year, for me, it was a bit of a head scratcher. My thought was, these kids have been through an awful lot, mm-hmm. and the teachers have been through an awful lot over the past year. School looked like it's never looked before, and we're going to bring them back. And the first thing we're going to do is sit them down for hours of high stakes testing. I was wondering if it was developmentally appropriate and whether it was helpful for the teacher's mental health. Dr. Prabhakar, maybe we start with you. Do you have any sense of whether this is the right time to be jumping back into high stakes testing?
Well, see, if you look at it just getting adjusted back to the school environment, it's not going to be a flip of a light switch. We really need to understand what the needs are at the student level as well as the teacher level when it comes to just going back to original level of interaction, which is more than a year old now. On top of that, you have certain models, and again, it all changes and it all depends which school district you are looking at, where there might be hybrid classrooms, where a teacher might be interacting in person with few kids and few kids are going to attend those lessons from a distance. So these are not kind of natural ways of teaching in the school settings, at least prior to the pandemic. And we have to really factor that in when it comes to the impact of those kinds of changes, how the curriculum is going to be designed and delivered in this very tight window. Now, on top of that, to your question, when you have a testing situation, it is anxiety provoking regardless. Even if, everything was the same a year ago, I think kids, parents, as well as teachers will tell you that long duration testing is generally anxiety provoking. On top of that, here, what's happening is we are still adjusting. We are still figuring out what's the safest way back to school, classroom. And on top of that, now we'll have this kind of testing environment. So it does cause some disruption. It does lead to some anxiety among teachers, parents, as well as children.
Well, and now, Dr. Lopez, I'm going to turn to you again. I'm not asking you all to become educators, but in all everything, it's almost impossible when you Google education or mental health in COVID where you don't come across the issue of disparities. How concerned are you as mental health specialist that existing disparities have been widened over the past year as a result of COVID?
Well, I think it's a very real situation. I think the disparities are evident and they have been evident all along. I think, some of the things that we have been doing is to try to support the families to access mental health, even by telehealth, despite of them not having easy access to it. We have provided equipment. We have provided a hotspot for psychotherapy, whatever we can do to connect. But yes, you have a very good point. The disparities are there and they have probably widened.
We have been chatting with two of the great institutions we have here to help people. Kennedy Krieger Institute, located here in downtown Baltimore. Of course, Shepherd Pratt out in Baltimore County, that our former Baltimore County executive, Don Moeller, fond of all things Baltimore County, trying to bring the best together with our friends at the Maryland Hospital Association to understand a little bit more about this. And I hope that in the future we can reach back to both of you, maybe 6 months from now, post-shot, maybe when school's starting up again for real at the end of summer. And in September, we get back to some normal. But it's been really great to visit with you all today, and we appreciate the input and all the work you do and all the work that so many mental health professionals do here in our community.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Thank
Dr. Carmen Lopez Arvizu from Kennedy Krieger Institute, as well as Dr. Deepak Prabhakar, Medical Director and Outpatient Services at Shepherd Pratt. On behalf of our friends at the Maryland Hospital Association, as well as at KO, Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and I will be chatting all week long about all sorts of medical issues, vaccine issues, local issues, and mental health issues, always keeping you informed. On behalf of our sponsors at State Fair in Catonsville, as well as El Guapo and our friends at Fadies, where we're shipping those crab cakes around the world, and I'm going to be eating them around the city and around the state all summer long, we are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.